From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Rock of Ages.
Detroit is preparing for Aretha Franklin's funeral on Friday. The service will be a celebration of a towering talent, a woman who gave the world incredible music all the way to the end of her life, such as what you're hearing now, Rock of Ages, sung by Aretha for Time magazine in 2016. Franklin recorded this hymn at Detroit's New Bethel Baptist Church, the same church where her father served as pastor for more than 30 years, the very same church where, 60 years before this recording was made, a 14-year-old Aretha Franklin stood up and sang Never Grow Old. Aretha Franklin, 1956, at Detroit's New Bethel Baptist Church, just 14 years old. The Motor City provides the bookends for the Queen of Soul's life, and it helps shape her. We're going to explore how. This hour on Point, paying tribute to Aretha Franklin and to Detroit. You can join us. What did the Queen of Soul mean to you? How are you celebrating her life? And how should Detroit remember her? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining me first today is Quinn Kleinfelter, reporter and editor for Detroit Public Radio. He's with us from Detroit. Quinn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Megan.
It is impossible not to have goosebumps listening to that 1956 recording of Aretha Franklin. I've listened to it, I don't know, a dozen times in the past couple of days, and I still can't believe she's just 14 when she's singing that song. But Quinn, first of all, tell us, the funeral, the celebration is tomorrow. What does Detroit have planned, and how is the city preparing?
Well, you said, how has Detroit been remembering Aretha Franklin? I mean, you can say, I think, very fondly and very fervently. They've had a week-long celebration that's led up to this funeral that happens tomorrow. They had an all-star gospel tribute on Monday. They had 2 days of public visitation at the Wright Museum of African American History. Thousands, literally, according to some counts, tens of thousands of fans that surrounded the museum to see her lying in repose in there. Many people saying just how she, you know, the Queen of Soul looked like a queen, actually, laying in her gold casket. Also, there were so many people that were, you know, you expect those types of events to be something somber, you know, in a way, or maybe even a bit sober. It really was not. I mean, it was very much a celebration of her life. People cheering and singing along with songs that were playing from the museum. They were selling T-shirts and all sorts of memorabilia around the actual museum itself.
Yeah,
she's going to be lying in repose at the church that you mentioned, New Bethel Baptist, although it's been relocated to a different location, but she'll be there. And then there's an all-star tribute concert that happens Thursday evening. And then tomorrow, the funeral that you mentioned, which will be a pretty large extravaganza full of music acts and some pretty well-known public figures.
Right. I'm seeing such as former President Bill Clinton, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, Ariana Grande, too. Is that right?
Yeah, along with performances from Stevie Wonder and apparently a big tribute from Smokey Robinson, not only a musician, but her lifelong friend that grew up not too far from her. And You know, you mentioned Bill Clinton. I mean, she sang at his inaugurations. She was known for some of the stuff she did with the civil rights movement, and made a point to sing at the inauguration of Barack Obama, the first black president of the U.S. You know, there were so many things that meant a lot, it seems, to Aretha herself. And she meant so much to so many people that I've talked to over this past week. So many remembrances, not just of her music, but how many of the things that she stood for, civil rights, empowering women, how much it seemed to echo in their own lives. And so it's been quite the send-off, or at least it has been, and it seems that that's going to be a very apropos one with this very, very likely long service that's going to happen on Friday.
Well, Quinn Kleinfelter, reporter and senior news editor for WDET, Detroit Public Radio, with us today from Detroit. Quinn, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I want to play a little bit more music here. This is also from 1956. The album is called Songs of Faith, recorded in the New Bethel Baptist Church, where Aretha Franklin's father was pastor. It was his church for 30 years. She was 14 years old. And here, Aretha singing, You Grow Closer. Aretha Franklin singing You Grow Closer in 1956. Joining us now is Ken Coleman. He's author and historian of African-American history in Detroit. He joins us from the Motor City. Ken Coleman, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
It is such a delight to have you and to remember the Queen of Soul here. I want to talk a little bit about the music we're hearing right now. I mean, this church, the congregation that's responding to Aretha, the fact that she was just a kid. I mean, tell us about how important, these early years were for her.
Well, singularly important. There's no doubt. Aretha Franklin, if you certainly include that recording, and that recording you pointed out was recorded at New Bethel Baptist Church, but a historic gentleman in our community who's not known by many but has a great history, by the name of Joe Von Battle, produced records. He also pressed Reverend C.L. Franklin's sermons, but he owned an influential record store on Hastings Street, the heart of the black community, the heart of the black business community in the 1940s and 50s. And so Aretha comes along at a time where the black community grows. The Franklin family moves to Detroit in 1946. Mm-hmm. Between 1940 and 1950, the black community doubles in population in Detroit, and it really is the sort of second wave of the Great Migration. And so Aretha comes along at a time when tens of thousands of African Americans, many of whom lived in the South, moved to Detroit looking for a better life. Aretha Franklin's music helped them get there.
Well, so the communities in Detroit churches then must have been absolutely central to the lives of all these new Detroiters.
There's no doubt. Longstanding organizations, and the Reverend Joanne Watson knows it well, the Detroit branch NAACP and the Detroit Urban League, being founded in the 19-teens here in Detroit for several decades before the Franklins moved here in 1946, really were the welcoming party for black folk who were getting off the train and driving and on long buses and automobiles, moving to the city. The church, churches like New Bethel Baptist Church, helped introduce black folk to Detroit, helped them find housing, helped them find a spiritual home. And voices like Aretha Franklin's were comforting voices because she certainly had all those great gospel instincts. But I think what is sort of the amazing thing about Aretha Franklin, and I think that Mahalia Jackson and Clara Ward had it too, but they had a soul to them. Yeah. And Aretha Franklin's music really sort of bordered on old school soul and blues in a respectful way. But I think that helped people to sort of understand her legacy, and they may not have even known her.
Right. So how much of that soul came from the early years of her in Detroit is a question I want to explore with you in a little bit. But I mean, to your point, Aretha was once quoted as saying, soul to me is a feeling, a lot of depth, mm-hmm. and being able to bring to the surface that which is happening inside to make the picture clear. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more, though, about New Bethel Baptist Church and her father, because you said something really interesting, that he was having his sermons pressed onto vinyl in the 50s and 60s. Is that right?
Absolutely. It was very innovative. Franklin becomes a national and international figure in part because of the vinyl disc. His sermons, his leading sermons, most popular sermons, were on record for people to buy. And so when he went into towns across the country in revival, people had heard those sermons. He also was one of the first Baptist preachers, Black Baptist preachers in Detroit, who used radio as a way to amplify his voice. And so he was on a legendary AM radio station in this town on Sunday evenings. And if you did not attend New Bethel Baptist Church, you certainly had an opportunity to hear him on radio, hear him on vinyl, and see him across the country.
Well, we'll talk about how he was instrumental then in amplifying his daughter's voice. I'm talking to Ken Coleman. He's author and historian of African-American history in Detroit. And we were talking about the relationship that Aretha Franklin has had with the Motor City and vice versa, and how the two really came to help define each other. We're going to head into this break listening to, of course, Think 1968. We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about Aretha Franklin and the Motor City and how Detroit helped make Aretha and her music for all of us. This is Operation Heartbreak, 1961. Aretha Franklin's funeral is scheduled for tomorrow. So we really want to ask, how did growing up in Detroit and then leaving and then returning to Detroit, a city known for so much great American music, how did that help shape the music that Aretha Franklin made? And, you know, if you're a Detroiter or have once lived there, what are your memories of Aretha Franklin and her music and how that's had an impact on Detroit? I'm joined today by Ken Coleman. He's author and historian of African-American history in Detroit. And Mr. Coleman, if I may, I'd like to introduce into the conversation Reverend Joanne Watson. She also joins us from Detroit. She is a good friend of Aretha Franklin's. She's a former Detroit City Council member, the first woman to serve as executive director of Detroit's NAACP, the country's largest branch. Reverend Watson, welcome to On Point.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a blessing to be here.
How are you remembering Aretha today?
Well, listening to her music certainly brings chills, because there was just no voice like Aretha's voice. Mm-hmm. She was a woman filled with a stirring soul that touched your heart. It evoked passion and a special insight. There was just not another voice in the universe comparable to Aretha Franklin. She truly was our queen. She was a wonderful woman, and more than a singer, more than an entertainer or an actress, she was a woman who felt deeply about causes. She was as committed to human rights and civil rights as her late father was, Reverend Dr. C.L. Franklin,
right,
who first invited Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to Detroit in June 1963 when he first said, "I have a dream." It was in Detroit. He was a guest of her father, Reverend Dr. C.L. Franklin, at that point senior pastor of New Bethel Baptist Church.
Well, we should note that June 1963 Detroit Walk to Freedom that you're talking about, that Reverend Franklin arranged, was the largest such civil rights walk in the country at the time, until just 2 months later, the March in Washington happened.
That's exactly right. As a matter of fact, Reverend Dr. C.L. Franklin, who helped organize it, he spearheaded this movement, chairing a human rights organization here in the city. He invited hundreds of small churches and block clubs and grassroots organizations to be a part of the assembly of this gigantic effort. And it was just one of the most critical, crossroads in Detroit's history, mm-hmm, and the nation's history. And Dr. Franklin also provided resources that helped Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. pay for that march in Washington, sure, in August of 1963. So Detroit did not just precede it, it also helped to fund what happened in August.
Now, Ken Coleman, though, in 1963, Aretha Franklin had already left Detroit, right, for New York to make her secular music career. But before that, if I understand correctly, again, by virtue of her father and New Bethel Baptist Church, she had an opportunity to meet Dr. King.
Sure.
Right? So tell us a little bit about that.
There's no doubt. I mean, certainly throughout the 1950s, and at one time, Reverend C.L. Franklin was an official with the Detroit branch NAACP. He was not the president or the executive secretary, as the title were at the time, but he headed committees there. And so he had a very strong relationship with the traditional civil rights movement. Certainly, Dr. King helps to found the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, is in Detroit often. And is often, during those trips, often at the home of the Franklins. And so Aretha grows up as a young teenager, really preteen, knowing people like Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And I mentioned Mahalia Jackson and Clara Ward. I mean, she grew up with these people. She couldn't help be, as Reverend Watson talked about, she couldn't help but be a civil rights activist. She grew up in it. She was inspired by it. And while she wasn't at the Detroit 1963 Walk for Freedom, her spirit was there, and she sang for Dr. King and efforts that he led around the country for a very long time. So she did, of course, sign with Columbia Records, mm-hmm, and the great John Hammond in 1960, but she was always back in Detroit.
Right. Always.
And that's that. You know, that's the sort of thing I think that Reverend Watson and I have talked about. She never really left here.
No,
I
mean, she didn't. Yeah, I mean, she loved Detroit.
Absolutely.
I mean, when I say she loved Detroit, she would ride down the streets of Detroit and be moved to provide funds and resources for people who looked like they were down in their luck. She would also ride by a park that had been named in honor of her father by the Honorable Coleman A. Young. And once she saw the sign that used to carry her father's name missing, you know, we got the call. You better replace that sign. And every now and then, somebody would take C.L. Franklin's name off the street sign near his church, and I would get a call.
Yeah.
And I would get a call and sometimes a text message in all caps. Please replace my daddy's sign. Yes, ma'am.
So she could touch mayors, members of city council, presidents.
But, you know, if I may, what seems so interesting is that of the many interesting things about her growing up in Detroit is, you know, as we're talking about, obviously there's this huge the influence of her father and the church, the civil rights movement, but also all this the intersection of a lot of secular music as well, right? Because, I mean, Smokey Robinson, she encountered B.B. King a lot. I mean, it's all there in the mix as she's growing up.
Absolutely. Now, Smokey Robinson was a good friend of her brother, Cecil Franklin. Mm-hmm. So she once told me that Smokey and her brother Cecil were violating her father's wishes and deciding they were going to get a process on her head. And they got in trouble for engaging in a walk on the wild side with a hairdo.
And what's a process for the younger folk in the radio audience?
That is slicking your hair with chemicals. Yes,
I want to get Aretha's voice in here for a second, sure. Because talking about like all the great artists that she encountered. I mean, like you said, they were all friends at the time. In 1986, Aretha spoke with ABC's Steve Fox about what made her neighborhood in North Detroit so special. Diana Ross, Smokey Robinson, they all came from that same place. And here's what Aretha said.
I guess during that time, a lot of artists used to come in to Detroit, and Sam Cooke and people like Ruth Brown, and B.B. King and Clyde McFadder and on and on and on. Younger people who aspired, like Smokey, myself, Diana, to be in the business were cognizant of these people coming in, and it was what we wanted to do, and it just kind of kept the ball rolling.
Now, Ken and Reverend Watson, you know, the name that really stands out, all great names that Aretha mentioned just there, but Sam Cooke especially, mm-hmm. right? Because, I mean, he, to me, is one of the epitomes of gospel singing turned secular, but, you know, obviously retaining that soul and getting worldwide popularity. It's so interesting that she encountered Sam Cooke in those early years.
Well, there's no doubt. But again, it's not really surprising. Again,
right.
when you look at the breadth and the power and the command that Reverend C.L. Franklin had, you know, he knew Sam Cooke, but he also knew Bobby Blue Bland.
That's right.
I mean, you know, you got to remember Aretha was born in Memphis. Really was only there for a minute. The family moved to Buffalo. He took a pastoralship there, but she was in Detroit by age four, in 1946. But all these people, when they came to entertain at the Flame Show Bar or the gospel singers that sang at New Bethel, you had to stop through. You had to stop through the Franklin household. So I want to point out, she was obviously influenced by Sam Cooke, but she was also influenced heavily. And this person was a family friend, the queen of the blues, Dinah Washington.
That's right. Lived in Detroit.
Who lived in Detroit. She had married Dick Night Train Lane when she passed in 1963.
It was Dinah Washington who said that Aretha was the next one, right?
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, she grew up in that household. And David Ritz writes about in one of the biographies about Aretha that Aretha was shaken. Obviously so when Dinah Washington died in 1963.
Yes.
And it really, in an unofficial way, sort of served, I think, Reverend Watson as a transition. Aretha had been recording at least nationally since 1960. In those Columbia years, she had some hits. She really didn't break through into 67 and 68 with Atlantic.
Right.
But people like Dinah Washington,
yes.
And on the religious side, Clara Ward again and Mahalia Jackson. I just think those three were very, very instrumental.
They absolutely were
in her childhood.
Yeah. And Clara Ward was very close to Reverend Dr. C.L. Franklin. Mm-hmm.
She changed their diaper.
Mahalia Jackson would cook for them.
That's right.
It boggles the mind.
Yeah, it's amazing. But it also shows you just a quick sense for the national listeners who may not know Detroit. I mean, Detroit, and Reverend Watson knows this as a civil rights leader and administrator herself. You know, growing up in Detroit in the 1940s and 1950s, there were only a few places in town where you could really live.
That's true.
I mean, there were some black folk that lived in the community called the Old West Side and in Coton Gardens where they were able to build their own homes. But for the large part, most African-Americans lived on the Lower East Side, going north to what the community we call North End.
That's right.
So Smokey Robinson grows up on Belmont.
That's
and then right.
right
around the block, Aretha grows up on East Boston Boulevard.
That's right.
They grew up together. They you mentioned the nexus between the Motown acts. Well, they were all the same age.
Yeah,
they all
right.
sang
yeah.
together.
Well, and there was another hookup. Now, Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown Records, was very close to Reverend Dr. C.L. Franklin.
So why did Aretha never sign with Motown?
Well, you know that was a choice, but they were close, and people need to know that. Every now and then, I'm told Berry Gordy would take recordings done by potential artists on Motown for Reverend Dr. C.L. Franklin to listen to get his blessing.
Yeah.
So there was a closeness. There was no competition. It was they had a friendship that was genuine and authentic.
If both of you don't mind here, I want to get a little bit more of Aretha's music in, and then we've got some callers who want to join us too. So going back again to 1956, I am just in love with this first album, Songs of Faith. Aretha, age 14. This is her singing Precious Lord, which, by the way, she also sang at Dr. King's funeral in 1968. But here she is in 56 singing Precious Lord.
When my way goes precious Lord, please linger near. And
it's hard to talk, I swear. Aretha Franklin singing Precious Lord in 1956. Reverend Watson, I have goosebumps. I can only imagine what it was like to be in the congregation listening to that.
My Lord.
I mean, let's take a call here. Someone's got to help me out. Renee is calling from Detroit. You're on the air, Renee.
Hey, hello. So, on Saturday morning, our household, we clean our household listening to Aretha Franklin. So there was Chain of Fool on the radio, Respect, all that good secular music. Come Sunday morning, we were listening to the gospel version of Aretha Franklin. But we had it good both ways. We absolutely enjoyed Aretha Franklin in our household.
Renee, thank you so much for your call. Reverend Watson, Ken Coleman, what do you have to say?
Well, not uncommon.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned that Reverend Franklin, for more probably about 20 years, broadcast, had an evening, Sunday evening broadcast from the church, live from New Bethel. And we had a tradition in our market for many years, Reverend Watson, where the R&B and soul stations played gospel music on Sunday. You didn't play secular music.
That's right.
So Saturday, the caller's point is lots of people grew up in households like that.
That's right.
You'd hear the hits, R&B and soul hits on Saturday. Sunday, it was devoted to the gospel. And so you had ministers like Reverend C.L. Franklin on.
That's right.
From sunup to sundown. You'd hear those sermons, and a lot of us grew up just like that.
And Aretha, when she performed for audiences worldwide, it was not uncommon for a spiritual or a gospel number to be included in her repertoire.
All the time.
It was just who she was.
That's right.
And, you know, she might break out into a Holy Ghost dancing. She might jump on the piano, the grand piano, and move into a gospel version of a known hymn. And this was something that was deep inside of her. She never left the church, and really the sound of the church never left her music, even if it was secular.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Ken Coleman, I didn't mean to interrupt there, but there's still a question lingering in my head, because, I mean, Detroit, the Motown sound, Motown records are so a definitive part of American music. I'm still curious, and maybe it doesn't matter, but why did Aretha never sign with Motown?
There is, and so Aretha, in the research I've seen, has never addressed it. Reverend Franklin never addressed it. But I have talked with people who have basically said, the general sense was, and you have to remember the timeline here, Aretha Franklin signs with Columbia in 1960. Tamla Records, the forerunner to Motown's corporation, Motown Record Corporation, started in 1959. So it really, and it obviously Motown, when it burst onto the scene, burst on like gangbusters. Yeah. But in 1959 and 60, Berry Gordy didn't have a record company. He had pressed some records. He had written some records for Jackie Wilson and the others. And what I understand...
Well, let me just jump in here for a second, because we got to take a quick break. I'll let you finish that thought when we come back. But we're talking about Aretha Franklin and her relationship and her love for the Motor City, for Detroit. Here's Aretha, 1967, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
I'm Linda Holmes. There's more stuff to watch these days than you can ever get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour. Twice a week, we give you the lowdown on what's worth your time and what's not. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There is a
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about Aretha Franklin and the city she loved, the Motor City, Detroit, and how the two really came to identify with one another. This is Spanish Harlem, 1971. I'm joined today from Detroit by Ken Coleman. He is a historian of African-American history in Detroit, and also by the Reverend Joanne Watson. She's a friend of Aretha Franklin's, former Detroit City Council member and the first woman to serve as executive director of the Detroit branch of the NAACP, the country's largest branch. Ken Coleman, just before the break there, you were telling us what you had heard about why Aretha never signed with Motown.
Yeah, and it's really not that surprising if you think about the timeline. Again, to recap, Motown starts in 1959, starts in earnest, but it gets off to a great start, but starts in 1959. Aretha signs with Columbia Records in New York City, big, big New York City, in 1960. John Hammond, the great, great talent scout and executive at Columbia, signs Aretha Franklin. He's the same guy who, he didn't discover them, but certainly brought them to a wider audience. He's the guy who signed Billie Holiday and Count Basie. And so I think that, quite frankly, Reverend Franklin said, hey, look, Aretha can sign with Columbia. It's a proven commodity. Berry Gordy is a great young man. He's going to do beautiful things. But I got to go with the percentages. And it all worked out in the end. I think what Reverend Watson was saying is, I mean, it was the way they chose to go, and it worked out all right for everybody involved.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to shift gears here slightly because there's a part of Aretha's life that doesn't get talked about much. But if we're going to be fully honest with, you know, her growing up in Detroit, I just want to open the door here a little bit because, we do have some listeners who are wondering. I mean, she had two children by the time she was 15, right?
Right. Right.
So, I mean, how do we look at that now?
Well, I mean, I and Reverend Watson may want to speak to this too. Look, I think that certainly there were African American women and women across the country who had had children at an early age. I think what was important about the Franklin family is that the family unit stayed together. And Reverend Franklin, even after Reverend Franklin and Barbara Siggers split as a couple, the family stayed together. The children stayed together, and it was a nurturing family. I don't think that her career missed a beat, if you will. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the family life missed a beat, if you will. And you know, those type of things happened during those days and still happen today, quite frankly. We just don't talk about it as much.
Yeah. Reverend Watson, I wonder if you want to share a thought about that.
I do not.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a call here. Janice is calling from Atlanta, Georgia. You're on the air, Janice.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I love the show. Always like it. What I wanted to say, Aretha was basically, that was a God-given talent. You know, she knew, of course, she had training and all of that, but her style, her ranges of all types of music, you can't teach that. She was just so gifted.
That's right.
She was also deep politically as well as spiritually.
That's right.
We will definitely miss her. I really liked her style. Mm.
Janice, thank you so much for your call. Reverend Watson, you want to add to that?
Oh, she very much was a multifaceted person. She was not a one-note person when she was invited to go to Atlanta to receive a trumpet award. She didn't miss a beat. She said, you really should present that in honor of my father, because his work as a steward, as a general in civil rights, is not as known and recognized as it should be. So I would appreciate it if you would honor my father, my father, Reverend Dr. C.L. Franklin. And Fanny Tyler, who is in Detroit, was an executive assistant to Reverend C.L. Franklin, was also an executive to Aretha Franklin during her work, because Aretha had an industry. She was giving birthday parties and Christmas parties and hosting revivals at New Bethel Baptist Church and doing special events every year. So she always had something going on, and Fanny Tyler helped with that.
Yeah,
she really maintained a connection to the community. And in a way, no other person at her level has done.
Huh. You know, something interesting, too. We've talked a lot about the heavenly voice, and it certainly is. She learned to play the piano essentially on her own. She started playing the piano at age 6. And a lot of people don't know this, but I researched it, found it out just in the days after her passing. She was accepted to Juilliard, the influential Juilliard School of Music, much later in life, in the 1990s. But the point I'm making is Juilliard just doesn't let anybody into the program.
Well,
she understood music, and she was a gifted piano player, and a lot of people sort of forget that because of the voice.
Well, I want to actually play here a 2016 recording of Aretha Franklin singing in the New Bethel Baptist Church. She's at the piano. We heard a tiny bit of it at the very top of the hour, but it's worth playing it again. This is just from a couple of years ago. Aretha at the piano playing Rock of Ages.
Rock of ages, my Lord, clap for thee.
Aretha Franklin in 2016 in the very church her father was pastor at for more than 30 years. And in 2016, she said you can still feel that ethereal feeling in the church. Ken Coleman and Reverend Watson, I mean, obviously Aretha Franklin's father has played a huge role in her life. And in this conversation, I got to ask, I mean, he was shot twice in the late 70s, 1979, when someone was attempting to rob him, and it was in a coma for several years. I mean, that's the thing that brought Aretha Franklin physically back, right, to Detroit, and she never really left after that. Do I have that right?
Well, certainly the timing aligns itself. He was a burglary at his home, West Side home, in 1979. Most certainly he lay in a coma until 1984 when he passed on. Aretha moves back to Detroit, at least formally, in 1982. So the timing does line up, and I'm certain that that had a lot to do with her coming back home.
But she came home every week.
But she
was in the coma. Yeah. She came home every week.
Yeah.
She was a daddy's girl. She loved her daddy. And of course, he was devoted to her, loved her, and he loved all of his children. But Aretha had a special bond with her father. And even though she was living in Los Angeles for a period when she was married to Glenn Turman, came home. She came to Detroit every week to check on her father.
And I think that's why you're seeing the outpouring. And the emotion and the laughter and the crying, the things that you've seen over the last several days, this is certainly not to cast any aspersions on any of her generational cohorts and the decisions that they made about where they'd live and how often they'd come back. But I think people connected with Aretha because she did never really leave. Even when she was in Los Angeles, she came back all the time. And she's been back so long. Now you have, and we often don't talk about this at all. We've listened to a lot of music from the 60s and 70s. Aretha had a recording career that went well into this century. And so there are people that have grown up on Aretha Franklin music from the 90s and the 2000s.
That's true.
And so they don't have any recollection of her actually not being in Metropolitan Detroit.
That's true. She sponsored revivals
all the time
at New Bethel Baptist Church.
Recorded there.
And provided the asking fee for these headline entertainers who came and performed. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the hundreds of guests who were in the audience, she would feed them soul food. She contracted with soul food restaurants to provide food for hundreds and hundreds who stood outside waiting not only to be fed spiritually by the gospel music, but they were fed physically. In addition to that, I've seen her, I can't even count the number of times I've seen her bring her own oxtail soup made by her own hand.
Yeah,
so in addition to what she'd order in terms of caterers, she would also want to have something of her own as part of the menu, part of the fare.
But that's commitment to community, right?
That's right.
She loved her people. That's right.
Well, I want to get a little bit of Aretha's voice in here again. This is her from just this June at the unveiling of Aretha Franklin Way in Detroit, talking about really just exactly what you two are talking about just now, how she's been staying truly connected to Detroit for all these years.
I skated at the Arcadia, and I started at the Flames Show Bar, went on to Bill K. Bush's 20 Grand over on 14th, and Detroit has been with me ever since then. They were there when no one else knew who I was, and I've been with them every step of the way.
That's Aretha Franklin just a little earlier this year. Let's take one more call here. Evelyn is calling from New Orleans. You're on the air, Evelyn.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you about the Franklins because in New Orleans, we're pretty much jazz freaks, gospel freaks. We had our own promoter, Reverend Herman Brown, who would bring her father and Aretha to New Orleans every year, and they were sensational. I had the pleasure of meeting Aretha and her brother along with her father, just saying hello to them when she was about 12, 14 years old, something like that, and I was about 2 years older. But Aretha was just a sensation. Her first song I think they recorded was Never Grow Old, and it's very good.
Yeah, we heard that a little earlier.
12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But she was supposed to come out. Her father had dreams of her coming out along with Barbara Streisand because he thought Aretha was just as good or better than Barbara. But so she struggled to reach that epitome, but she finally made it. And New Orleans has ever always loved her and her father.
Yeah,
they with Dr. King, the promoters would get together since the world was small for black people. So they knew everybody. They knew the gospel singers and they knew the soul singers like Sam Cooke, whom I met.
Evelyn, I got to take it back from you because we're just running down on time here, but thank you so very much for your call. Reverend Watson, you hear Evelyn there from New Orleans, remembering what it was like to see Reverend Franklin and then Aretha Franklin on the stage together preaching and singing.
Yes, and that sense of connection that she had with her throughout. He represented the best in preaching. He epitomized black preachers during his era. It wasn't just Ford Motor Company, $5 a day, that helped lure black folks to Detroit. It was also Reverend Dr. C.L. Franklin, whose vinyl recordings, his sermons, were going around the country. Many people would show up at the Greyhound bus station here and head straight to New Bethel Baptist Church seeking to meet and to connect with Reverend Dr. C.L. Franklin.
Hey, so in the last couple minutes that we have here, let me ask both of you. I mean, Aretha is such a huge, towering figure in American life, in Detroit's life. I mean, how best would you like the city to continue to remember her? I mean, I don't want to reduce it down to like a statue, but what should be the way that Detroit ought to carry on her memory?
Well, I think a lot of layers of government, I think Reverend Watson will agree with this. The city government has already named a portion of a downtown street in her honor. I imagine that state government will actually probably take a freeway and aptly call it the Aretha Franklin Freeway of Love. But look, one of the things I've said is I think what would be phenomenal, and if you know Detroit's landscape and architecture, you'd think this would be a great thing too. Aretha attended high school at Northern High School on the North End in Detroit. That school now is an international school for young women. And I think what would be great is for that school to be named in her honor in the neighborhood in which she grew up. It would certainly serve as a motivating factor, I believe, for those young women. Again, Aretha Franklin wasn't somebody who stopped recording in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. They know her music. And I think that ultimately what would happen is I think that a lot of philanthropic organizations perhaps would offer grants and dollars that could help build that school and make it stronger. I would like to see the Detroit Academy for International Academy for Young Women be named after Aretha Franklin.
What a great idea. Reverend Watson, what do you think?
I agree with Ken Coleman. And the truth is the 20th century and the 21st century culture, not just in Detroit, but worldwide, has been greatly influenced by Aretha Franklin, our queen. I can't think of anyone who has stood taller than Aretha Franklin on just the social, cultural, musical, and humanitarian arena.
Yeah, we just got about 30 seconds here left here, Reverend Watson. Do you have a story about Aretha that you want to leave us with?
I think people need to know that Aretha, out of her own pocket, paid for those who were homeless and those who were hungry. Every year, she paid for the funerals of entertainers who were down on their luck and left no resources for their funerals. She was just a larger than life, but generous and gracious and hospitable to the end.
Well, Reverend Joanne Watson, friend of Aretha Franklin and former Detroit City Council member, it's been such a privilege to share this hour with you to remember Aretha. Thank you so very much.
I thank you.
And Ken Coleman, author and historian of African-American history in Detroit, thank you as well. What a privilege.
I appreciate the focus on Detroit.
And you know what? We're going to sign off today with Freeway of Love, 1985. The music video was shot in Detroit. It's a wonderful way, I think, to sign off to the Motor City and to Aretha Franklin as well. Her funeral is being held in Detroit tomorrow. But let's celebrate the music. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.